Ben Steele, finally, you've made it onto the Data Strategy Show. Great to see you. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Yes, it's been a long time coming. I must say, this morning I looked on Spotify for your last five podcast interviews.
Yes.
And for some reason, I watched the first 10 seconds of each one.
Did you?
And
okay.
Yeah, and there was a very different welcome.
Oh, was there?
To each guest, which I suspect is based on how well you know the individual, right? But you know, certainly I didn't get a Bill Shmarzo type welcome. So I'm super jealous straight off the bat. But it was warm enough, right?
It was warm enough. So warm. It was very warm.
It was great. So no, I'm good. Thank you, sir. How are you?
It's you know what? I'm fine. It's always good to see you. And I actually do like the hat.
Well, it's cold, right?
Yes, I know it's cold.
I think it's -4.5 where I am. I'm out in the countryside. I did ask permission to wear the hat.
I know you did, but I like it.
Yeah. So, and it happens to be one of my brother-in-law's businesses. Yeah, so I'm not a rugby player, but he's got a business called RBX Rugby. So I'm always flying the flag, championing small businesses,
well
big
done.
Businesses, medium-sized businesses. But quite frankly, my ears needed to be warm, and I needed a haircut, right? So thanks for I'm certainly doing that middle-aged, disheveled look very well
on a Friday afternoon. Everyone on this show.
Awesome.
So listen, for my viewers, I mean, I've known you for a long time now, Ben, but for my viewers, my listeners, just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to now. And so they know who you are.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in the insurance industry now for financial services for probably best part of 30 years. I've been in sort of specialist or specialty insurance now for well over a couple of decades. I've been in data roles largely, I would say, crudely speaking, in and out of data roles in that time, right? So there's always been a data lens to them, even if they've not been data roles, so to speak. So, and then I think the last sort of 10 to 12 years, certainly career took a bit more of a defined direction into more defined data roles, you know, building and running data functions. And the last sort of 6 or 7 years has been building and leading sort of data analytics functions, essentially building from the ground up, right? So in that sort of blank sheet of paper, that sort of creator mold, I'm normally the first data leader through the door. So my experience is very much in sort of low maturity type environments. Currently, I joined an insurance and reinsurance broker, a global business called BMS Group, September of 22. It feels like I've been there for forever. It just has that warm, comfortable, familiar feel about it. Fast paced growing business, fantastic, really, really interesting business commercial environment to be in. I was hire number one for that data analytics function. So it was very much the blank sheet of paper. We've been doing all the good stuff since, right? So building the team, working on strategy, definition, implementation, this inherent search for value, which I'm sure will come up multiple times through the conversation, and just really just enjoying the experience, right? New environment. In my previous role, I'd done the same thing, right? So I built and led a team of about 35 for data analytics, data science, etc. Lots of success there in terms of, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars worth of value. The team built a proof of concept algorithm that became its own insurance business called Key. Lots of fun and interest in there, right? As well as, you know, some tangible wins along the way. Some people, I guess, at this stage in my career would call me a veteran. I'm trying to avoid the term for fear of showing my age.
Well, you've got a
good degree of industry and practitioner experience.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. And I think it's a testament to you, actually, because you have, I know that you came from an operations background, didn't you? Yes. You know, in terms of that real hardcore insurance. So you knew the business, you got to understand it, how it works, and you got your teeth stuck into the insurance industry, and then you kind of segued into data. But for me, what's interesting is what you just mentioned a little bit earlier, is how you're always, you know, team number one, you know, the first person through the door, low maturity, probably got some, you know, reporting going on somewhere, somebody's doing it. When you walk into something like that, and I'm sure there's going to be lots of people who are going to be listening to this who are aspiring data leaders. What are some of the first things that you have to do in order to start building, and not building a platform, system, whatever it is? What are the first things that you have to do organizationally?
Great question. And it probably takes me back to a few of your LinkedIn posts over the last few months, right? The, you know, who are the first hires? What does, you know, what does the first 30, 60, 90 days, et cetera, look like? I mean, I had an interesting start here. I've been here just over a year now. It was very much a soft landing. So I was sort of keen to sort of move quickly. But given I was, you know, hire number one, you know, there wasn't a team as such for me to work with to start getting things done, right? So it was a more slower, more deliberate start, which, you know, I think given the context made absolute sense. What it did allow me to do, and I think it talks to your point about my background in operations, is it allowed me to really immerse myself in the business commercially, understand how it works, understand its drivers, understand the strategy. You know, spent lots of time deep in understanding, you know, different aspects of the business's strategy. We were in 2023, so last year we were going through a refinancing process with new investors. So there was a lot of commercial context in which to really, really understand. And I think that's super important for every data leader, right? Is you know, I don't come from a technology or a technical background. I mean, I can hold me on. I would say I'm more of an analyst, right? So, you know, I'm analytical. Actually, one of the first things I did was just ran my own data set out of the system and just spent some time, right? Because the best way to understand a decent sized business is worth a couple of billion, right? So it's a decent sized business. There's circa 1,200 to 1,500 employees there.
Okay.
So it's a reasonable size, right? So it's just to spend some time with the business and spend some time with the data, right? So, and I think those two things contextually together, so understand the business, understand the leaders of the business, and understand the data is a really good start point. I think some people want to go straight into, right, let's do strategy, let's get on with the, you know, the PowerPoint stuff and all that kind of good stuff. Actually just getting a good ground in the business was a really, really good start point. And also it allowed me to then sort of tease out some of the key questions I had about, okay, well, what really is important, right? And before we even start with strategy work from a data standpoint, what do we really want to do here? What's the appetite for us to do, right? I'm not a big functional build it and they will come kind of guy, right? So I certainly would be wanting to make sure that the work that we're doing is adding value in some shape or form now, whether that's, you know, supporting people with their day jobs, whether that's supporting an exec driver business, or whether that's, you know, generating additional income, etc. So that ability to be able to read the room, the corporate room, and understand, get one's finger on the pulse. It feels like I'm chucking a bunch of buzz terms out there, but really just get to the heart of the business and understand what are its priorities, where are they pressing. I think from a stakeholder standpoint, you know, who appears to be somebody who is going to be an open door, right? So again, when we think about where do we get some runs on the board, you know, do we go and push for the area that obviously needs it the most but potentially doesn't want it, or do we go somewhere where actually there is a real willingness and a need, right, to work with a data team and to support the, you know, the goals of their business? So that was kind of it was, and it was a, it was a, it wasn't the start I expected. And I work for the chief commercial officer. It's an awesome guy called Elliot Powell. And I remember at the time he sort of sensed my sort of almost this nervous excitement. I'm sure he called it agitation, right? But and there was just an eagerness for me to sort of, you know, move on, build a team, do strategy work, make stuff happen. And that's clearly all happened, right? But actually he was right. You know, we don't have to be rushing this in the first week, right? This is about getting a really good understanding of the way this business operates, understanding how data generally can play a part in adding value to its strategy, but also to its growth plans. And then we go, right? So it's the football analogy is, you say, you put your foot on the ball before you don't rush the pass.
So how long was it? A week? Was it 2 weeks? Was it a month that you did that for?
A while. It was it was probably a couple of months. Right now, there was obviously there were things that were going on. We were doing preparatory stuff around budgets and for resources. You know, I was clearly having conversations with you know, potential partners to support us with data strategy work. So there was clearly some of the other work that I was preparing for. And quite frankly, because I was, you know, I may have been essentially the CDO data leader, but I was still the first one through the door. So actually there was some specific needs of some of the senior exec that, you know, quite frankly, I am pragmatic enough to need to roll my sleeves up and support some of that work as well, right? So there was, so there was a real, probably the, I would say, if I joined in September, probably the run to the end of the year was embedding, immersing, planning, and then essentially from sort of January onwards, it was, right, now we're moving,
now
right?
We need to now do something.
Now we're on strategy, definition, planning and execution, team builds, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, I think again, looking back now, Elliot was absolutely spot on in terms of his read on the business. He was also relatively new, but completely a bright, sharp guy. One of the key reasons why I chose to join BMS. And he was absolutely right. Is you know, yes, there's an eagerness to get stuff done, but this wasn't me picking up a steady state team. This wasn't me turning around something that was broken. This was a build, and we needed to build in a very careful and deliberate, and
pragmatic
manner.
Way as well.
Exactly.
So let me ask you a question then. As a data leader coming into that kind of position where there's very little to kind of deal with in terms of day-to-day team, you know, you're not coming into an operation that's already running. How much of your time was actually spent understanding the organization through the lens of change?
That's a great question. I mean, that's a really good question, right? Mm. So I think having done data strategy work now for a number of years, having written and implemented a number of data strategies, and I'm sure you've seen this far more than most, Samir, is often that change component is the bit that's completely ignored, or certainly the level of attention I pay to it is disproportionately low relative to the more functional form of the work, right? So, so I was absolutely keen to understand how did we as an organization think about change, not just the process and the functional form, but mindsets, behaviors, resistance to. I joined an organization at a point in which there is, or there was, and there is even more so now, a high degree of change.
Right.
So a business that's grown several fold in the last few years and will continue to do so in the next few years. So it's a high change state organization. So I needed to be able to understand how I could essentially start a data transformation program in a way that would be accretive to that process. Yes, there was going to be some disruption. My intention was ultimately for that work to be positively disruptive, but it needed to feel like it is an extension to the broader change journey that we were already on, that was organizational wide. It was London, it was the US, and it was global. So and I think what when you fuse that, the change part, back into the business context, it became very clear that whilst we were working on, and I'm responsible for a global data strategy, ultimately it was still about understanding. I mean, you described them as business use cases. Quite frankly, nobody outside a data function uses the term data use case. I'm not sure anyone out of a data or IT function even uses the term use case, right? But basically, what's the business context?
Yeah.
Where are the opportunities? Where are the threats? Where's the need?
Yep.
And then to structure a strategy around that specifically, so that we were able to prove value quickly, regularly, whilst building capability, right? And then ultimately, you know, we talk about, and I'm sure it will come up again in this conversation, but when we talk about, you know, the amorphous words of data culture and data literacy, you know, the biggest way to win hearts and minds is to give people something of use and value, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So again, starting to understand how I might be able to start to set the context for some of that work.
So let's just talk about that, actually, because I'm always interested to get, you know, your take specifically on areas like, I mean, obviously we've talked about the change piece, and I get that you've understood how the organization shakes and how it, you know, onboards change. And but let's just talk about culture, because culture for me is a really big topic. It's massive.
Yeah.
Right. It's got so many facets to it. The thing I find with culture is, for me, there's already a culture that exists in the organization. BMS had an organizational
yep.
culture that has existed for a while, even though, you know, that there was probably CEOs come, you know, I don't know, you know, maybe there were CEOs coming in and out, and maybe there's some turnover or whatever, but there would have been a change in culture at one point. But it sounds like you had a constant in terms of it built up, and there's momentum in the business. So you're coming into that, and you're understanding where the organization is, and then you've got to apply this thing called data. For me, and you know, I don't particularly talk about data culture, because I find that is probably counterintuitive in some way. And the reason is because, you know, is there an ERP culture? Is there a CRM culture?
Yeah,
is there,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And after, and so I, and maybe, you know, it's a way for the kind of data teams to get themselves more around, you know, their own, they feel that they've got different cultural practices. How do you get over, or how do you approach the areas of culture and maybe business literacy rather than data literacy within your teams to help them as new incoming teams into an area which, you know, sounds like a really exciting place? How do you help them absorb and onboard themselves into less so data culture, more infusing data into the actual culture of the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a broad topic, and you're right. It doesn't surprise me that you'll often, I suspect that quite a few people sort of steer clear of it as a topic of discussion, but also within the work that they do, right? Because it's also hard. I think if you're a consultancy, it would be hard to necessarily measure your value in that work as well, right? In terms of the value to a business. So let me pull out a couple of things, and some of this is based on my experiences in the current role. A lot of this is based on my experiences certainly in my previous role. Let's work from the previous role forward. I was about four years in the role. So, and as I say, started with a relatively small team of a handful. We got to, I think, 25, 30, plus I had other responsibilities. At the point at which I'd left, we built out new capabilities in terms of skill sets that we had within the business, such as data science. Now, my belief was and still is that fundamentally, if you want other people to, culture is about behavior, right? I mean, what's the famous John Amici quote is, you know, culture is defined by the worst behaviors that are tolerated. So
yes.
what I wanted to do was I wanted to build a team that in itself was so credible that it would change the way in which people would
perceive them,
perceive yeah. with them, and therefore yeah. interact with them, right? For me, that was the start point.
Mm-hmm.
This idea mm-hmm. that somehow I was here in some sort of godlike role to sort of change everybody's lives is, you know, and yeah. I think, you know, there's a lesson in there for a lot of leaders, not just in the data space.
Yes.
I've seen it over the years in
yes.
technology leadership roles, where there's a very much a, you know, the business is the problem, the business is the change. Here's, mm-hmm. you know, this critique of,
yeah.
and in my view,
it's their problem, I think, not mine.
Well, but if you want to engage in a conversation with a business about what they maybe need to think, mm-hmm. do, or could think and do and mm-hmm. behave differently, you've got to be so credible in your own right.
Sure.
So
sure.
there's a famous Steve Martin quote, which is, be so good they can't ignore you. Mm-hmm. And my intention was to build such a highly effective function that it was credible. It was so credible that one, it, you know, beyond that plus the work that we were doing would mean that we, you know, we were not having to navigate conversations around budgets and headcount. You know, the work spoke for itself, and
yeah.
certainly I had that in the previous role. And that essentially when you build that, my experience tells me when you build that kind of operating model, it generally starts to change hearts and minds within the business, and you'll get, and you know, clearly everybody is at some way in an adoption curve, and I suspect we'll talk about AI at some point, right? But we're basically all now being pushed through this adoption curve. It's no different with a data analytics team, right? It's new. Some people will be up for that. Some people will want to engage with it. Other people will not. Some people will want to resist it. But quite frankly, if you can build something that's so highly effective, one, the team gets a real buzz out of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes... Mm-hmm. The sort of energy becomes that sort of self-sufficient, and two, you change hearts and minds. If you perform well and you deliver, and you have a repeat embedded set of behaviors, and then your last point, then what I'm trying to do is not to build out a team of just technical specialists. I need people who I can then put into a live business context, I haven't got to find somebody who can insulate and run the interference between somebody who does the technical work well, mm-hmm. but can't interact mm-hmm. with the business.
Mm-hmm.
I want people who are, you know, 80% specialists, 20% mm-hmm. generalist, right? But that ability to be able to work with the business, sit in a room, you know, it was a session this week, you know, a member of the team who is senior enough but is not in a management role, you know, when I sat with one of our managing directors. That model works, but it takes mm-hmm. time and effort to get there. You've got to select the right people, you've got to build the right
not
culture.
Everyone can do that. Yeah.
Set the right expectations.
Yeah.
And you know, and also accept that occasionally you're gonna get that wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
go on, carry on.
No, go on.
So I was, you know, when you were talking about, you know, how you've got to be that be so good they can't ignore you. How much of your at your level, the first, you know, first one in the door, thinking about all of the things around the business, what they do, you know, trying to kind of ramp up and think about what kind of change they can onboard. How much did you have to repeat in terms of communication? What was that level of communication that you had to get into in the first 2 to 3 months that you were getting to know what was what within the business? What did you need to educate and guide people on?
Again, great question. I mean, I would might sound slightly controversial as an answer. Communication in the first few months was very much listening rather than
than
telling, right?
And
albeit asking lots of questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So having
mm-hmm.
the sort of humility to, having been in industry, this was a new part of that industry for me. So sort of having the humility to step in and go, well, look, I know the industry, I don't know insurance broking, right? So so I think you know, communication straight off the bat was that, and obviously that in itself draws people in, because you know good practical active listening is in itself is a valuable skill. And then I think it's it's this point about, you know, therefore then the question is, at what point do I have something to say? At what point should I say it? How should I say it?
Yeah.
Again, I think if people want to be heard, my experience tells me, give people a reason to be heard. Right now, there are lots of theorists, as you and I know, in the data space, right? Mm-hmm. People who quote unquote talk a great game. Mm-hmm. I was on I think you was actually at this round table about a year ago, an Orbiter round table, and it was around data leaders of generative value. And Caroline Zimmerman, who's amazing, was kind of facilitating the conversation on our table. She asked the question, who's delivered value for a business? There was 10 people on my table. And I think 10 people put their hands up. She said, how many of you can actually give real examples. And there was two people, right? So I take comfort from the fact that, you know, I was one of those two people. But instantly what I tried to do in those first few months, as well as listen, was think about, where is there an immediate need that can be solved? So again, to use the overly used term low-hanging fruit, in a low maturity business from a data standpoint, there's often lots of opportunities hiding in plain sight. They might not be the most sophisticated, they might not be the most sexy, but there was, if there's value, then go grab it, right?
So what would some of those have been for you?
So I think, you know, just sitting down with some senior members of the business to just do some rudimentary analysis on their portfolios to help them make some tactical short-term decisions that support how they're executing against their strategies, working through, you know, conversations on skill sets that they're hiring for. You know, that first phase is very much almost like a servant leadership thing, which is, you know, I'm stepping into this world, I'd love to hear what your business unit is about, and I'd love to understand if I can be of service, right? Yeah, and that may well be they're wrestling with a business challenge and you can bring a different dimension to that. That may, as I say, may well be a hiring thing. It may well be, you know, they're working on an RFP where they're pitching for new business. I think it's sort of understanding their context,
right,
where you can
plug in
and add value. There were several examples of that, I think, through the course of the first sort of 6 to 12 months. And then as a team started to arrive, then we start to build a function that thinks and works like that on a more repeated basis, right? Yep. So sort of the no job is too, you know, no job is too tough type thing, right? So, you know, by the time I'd had the first two team members join, you know, we were stepping into a world that technically maybe data functions, certainly not small immature data functions, wouldn't be stepping into, but I had hired for skill sets and mindsets that were very much aligned to that way of operating. And therefore, you know, for a while, whilst I'm still putting together the structure for the strategy, planning for team, etc., we're sort of like nomads, right? We're sort of going, we're wandering and going with the workers, right? And that builds its own.
You're going with the wind,
And that builds its own sense of. That builds its own sense of momentum, right? And obviously you can't work like that forever. It's then about how you put structure and shape around that in the form of a strategy and an overall lot model.
So okay, we've got to that point where you've done your listening, and great that you actually sat there and did that sort of servant leadership. You took that approach, because I've been in many meetings where people would want to get to solution before they really even understand what's really happening and what's going to be of advantage to the business. But let's go to first hire. Who was that and why?
Good question. I'm sure you and I've had this conversation many times. So I am of the firm belief that when you're starting small and you're building out, your first few hires can't be specialists, they have to be strong generalists. Now, why do I believe that? One, you know, that's a that's a path I've taken previously in terms of my own career. Two, that's how I've built data functions previously. And three, I think given the organizational context in my role, it's absolutely what the business needed, which ultimately is the most important, is the most important factor. So I hired, first three roles were essentially sort of generalists, the deep generalists that could cross over from sort of technical data analysis into data visualization. There was some data engineering skill in there, and actually a little bit of data architecture, so they could become self-sufficient, albeit tactically, in a world, because ultimately if I hire a certain skill set at that point and they are dependent on somebody else to do something before they can, that they can move, then you know, in my mind it's the wrong hire, right? So so I call them data unicorns. It's not, it's,
but it sounds like it, because they're like four people in one.
Well, and they exist, right? I mean, I had the pleasure of working with a few, hiring and working with a few in a previous role. Actually, some of them are now with me here. So yeah, they absolutely do exist. And I think it was absolutely essential. Again, also people that aren't particularly precious about the start point, because again, finding people with a blend of skills in theory is possible. A lot of people in the data space from experience want to be in a specialism. So actually these people are probably mindsets the harder thing to hire for, right? So I've been very, very fortunate with the hires that we've made so far, that people have come in with the right skill set, with the right mindset, and are completely comfortable and actually really excited about the context of the organization that they're joining, knowing that ultimately, you know, my commitment is to back them, you know, start to build the function around them, and, you know, give them a heck of a lot of opportunity to sort of grow and develop and learn along the way.
So the unicorns, your data unicorns, they're, what you're doing is you're asking them to lead on very small, iterative, small value-based projects?
Exactly.
You know, so you're just trying to do some, let's just for you know, to use a term that everybody uses, you're building either an MVP or a POS or something like that, right? And you're just trying to get the business to be latched onto something. This is what we're doing. This is how we're going to do it. It's going to be very quick paced. If we fail, we fail. We'll, and if it's the wrong thing, then we'll quickly spin something else up. Is that your view, to bring in these generalists who have got this, you know, four person inside one?
Yep, pretty much. Yep. Pretty much. Yep. That's exactly. I mean, we might not describe it that way.
No,
right?
as that way. Yeah, sure.
And, but that's exactly it. Is, and again, the aim is, you know, I am the first data lead. This is, you know, BMS taking a very strategic decision in terms of what it wants to do with regards to data and analytics. I want to be able to, and there was clearly an expectation on me, rightly so, that I can prove value early and I can prove value quickly. In
what
that
did
environment,
value, what did value that, mean to the people at BMS?
It's a great question, and I sort of split value into three, right? And in my mind, certainly low maturity, low data maturity organizations, I would suggest probably fit a similar profile. There's sort of three tranches of value. There's clearly the strategic commercial value. So it's generating, it's enabling the generation of, I'm not talking about monetization, in terms of how we enable the generation of additional revenue, top line, or profit, bottom line, right? You know, that's the holy grail. They're normally the lighthouse use cases. You'll be lucky in a low maturity organization if that's more than 25-30% of your use cases, right? So certainly at day one. And then there's a tranche below that I think often gets it gets underappreciated. I'm going to call them high utility. So in the sort of economical concept of utility being something that's of value to its user, if you think about the way that car manufacturers work, you know, somebody, there are specific users, that specific consumers that want to buy a Volvo, right? And they probably won't buy a Tesla, for example, right? So I think and often these are the ones that are the easiest to get to first. The high utility use cases, these are the things that enable an exec member or an MD or a business unit to run their business, right? It gives them additional visibility in itself. If we went and asked one of them, well, at day one, what
do you need?
Can you put a dollar value to this?
Yeah.
Right. And so they're going to say, basically go away. It's a strategic imperative, right? I need the visibility to be able to understand and run my business, particularly in a fast-paced growing business. So the Lighthouse use case is key, strategically commercially valuable. High utility use cases, again, the right mix between those two is probably about 25%, 25%, or maybe 20, 30%. And then there's a rung below that sits in every organizational world. The more functional stuff that's operational in nature, yes, it still needs to be done. That stuff needs to be highly prioritized and curated as a backlog, so people don't lose themselves in the functional form of the work. But it also can't be ignored, right? So again, when I think about that sort of pyramid, because that mix of use cases, you can sort of plot that against the pyramid almost of hierarchy within the organization, right? So if all we're doing is focusing on the most senior 5% of an organization, then that may well be great, but in reality, what about everybody else? So again, past experience tells me that, you know, creating enough bandwidth to serve the wider business is equally as important as solving for the more strategic, the higher exposure based deliverables, and that's how you build a reputation. Ultimately, you build it top down and you build it bottom up.
Yeah, bottom up.
And the data leader's job, in my mind, is to find the perfect recipe for that organization in that given moment. What's the right mix? How much of each of those ingredients, how much of each of those factors should be being controlled? Because obviously the closer you get to the top of the pyramid, that's great. It's high exposure, potentially high value, also potentially high risk reputationally. But if that's only serving a specific proportion of the organization, then the realities are, you know, we could be losing or certainly not warming the rest of the audience, who are in my mind equally as important, right? And the lifeblood of data analytics teams, really, if the effective ones is you go and measure their interactions with the business daily. It's not the big shop window moments, right, that everybody's prepared for. They're well constructed, almost sort of stage managed to some degree. It's the day-to-day interactions. It's the, you know, somebody coming over needing help for an hour and someone finds the time, right? It's the little pet project that somebody's working on with somebody in finance that maybe is less visible, but actually that's just built that relationship. That's built a relationship for life, right? That's the sort, again, the sort of foundational construct of data analytics teams. It's built off of that, right?
Yeah. But you and you're in the fortunate position that you're doing it from the ground up, because you are starting from a blank sheet of paper, whereas others may come into a very, you know, established, you know, they're already in their rhythm and they're already doing something. So actually in that sense, but just to go back to your view of value and from commercial to utility to functional, just very quickly, give me, just for those people who are listening and kind of, you know, those aspiring data leaders, give me three examples in each of those categories very quickly.
Absolutely. So in strategic commercial value, we are building products that analyze cross-sell opportunities and upsell opportunities. So that's you know, not, they're not overly sophisticated products, but they are inherently valuable, right, in terms of us understanding how we leverage existing commercial relationships to grow our business. So that's a very tangible example. Similarly, in that space, we sit as insurance brokers, we sit within a distribution chain, right? So we have clients one side and we have insurers the other side. So similarly, looking at our relationships with insurers to understand how we optimize those commercially to drive value for our business. So those two are, you know, very much classic examples of Lighthouse use cases for a business that sits within the distribution chain. High utility, these are really good examples in my mind. They might not necessarily float everybody's boat, but CFO analytics for a finance team that enables it to talk to shareholders, and it enables it to start asking, you know, a different type of more a deeper set of questions to business leaders, and similarly for a CEO, whether that's at a group level or whether it's at a business unit level, being able to provide that And again, this is where I think we can start to look at the different types of analytics. So whether it's descriptive diagnostic, yes, we can do the stuff that looks backward, that's useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
But actually, just to bring in some fairly simple modeling techniques to sort of start to predict what the next sort of, you know, 1 to 3, even 5 years looks like. So the work we're doing there, again, is what's been really exciting about it, is to see how the outputs, the content's being used, and being plugged into to some of those conversations. And there's a sort of a real energy, because firstly, you'll often get questions back, which show how people are engaged, but also to see how the content's being used to drive strategy conversations, how it's been used to drive. So that's been, and we've seen within those already. I mean, some of those use cases in terms of their outputs, you know, are fairly nascent, but we're already in six figures in terms of a tangible value for the work there, right?
Fantastic.
So, and again, with, you know, with a really good supportive set of investors and a board that's asking all the right questions. I'm super impressed by our exec and board. And you know, this is helping, you know, manage those conversations in an insightful way, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then, you know, as we get into the operational world, I wouldn't want to be having talked about how important it is. I wouldn't want to be glib for it, but that stuff can be very, very diverse. You know, I mean, one of the data unicorns in the team, Rocky, last year built a Power Apps and Power Automate product with a Power BI show over the top to support a broken first line audit process.
Okay. Yeah.
So not necessarily what you would class as a traditional sort of data or analytics product, but again, that point about going where the need is and where the value is, right?
Yep.
So, and then obviously in that space, it's, you know, you get heavier into some of the more descriptive and diagnostic stuff, but I like that world, because often that's where you'll find these little connections being made with sort of citizen sort of data specialists that are embedded within business areas. That's where the team typically gets a lot of its energy from day to day, is from those interactions, because they're, again, they're fast paced. They're a bit less chunky, so they're a bit more manageable. So the frequency is higher, the touch points are higher, and the sort of almost the reward mechanisms in terms of them feeling good about the work that they're doing, it's much more frequent, right? So, so again, if I think of previous role, followed a similar structure, really. There were three or four core products. A lot of it was analytics or machine learning based that were sitting in that high value, as I say, a proof of concept algorithm has now become a $1 billion business.
Yeah.
But there were some fairly straightforward sort of analytics products that were generating tens of millions of annual revenue, annual recurring revenue, right? So plus some of the utility stuff and a whole raft of some of the more sort of operational stuff.
So just, you know, as you're talking, and you're talking a lot about value, you're talking a lot about value attributed to a hardcore top or bottom line number, right? You're attributing it to revenue, and you're making sure that you're driving the business. When you're getting into that point of looking at the use cases, tell me the mechanism by which you absolutely start to say, okay, well, which one do we go for? Which one's going to, you know, be more priority than the other? And is that based on some kind of revenue number? Are you sitting down with your opposite number in terms of in that business function, or, you know, the CEO or part of the C-suite, and saying, what is that actually going to give you at the end of the day if I produce that for you? What is your approach on that? Because this is something I believe that a lot of data teams miss.
I agree. Right. So, and actually, I think data teams just can do it well and not so well, almost equal measure. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, there are some that do it well, there are some that don't, and actually some teams do both. Right. So, and I certainly past the experiences I've got of both. So, and I would say that, I mean, if this was a job interview, I would say this is probably where I would describe a bit of a strength for me personally, right. In the sense that firstly, that's not a data conversation, that's a business conversation, yep. right? And I know that you and I are very much see the world the same way there. So this idea that it's not a data use case, it's a business use case.
It's a business use case, yeah.
Actually, it's a business goal, right? So mm-hmm. I think keeping it at that level, mm-hmm. we're mm-hmm. not trying to educate, I'm not trying to educate data leaders, business leaders on data at that stage. Yeah, and I'm also not trying to educate them on their own business. I'm trying to understand what the goals are. And then, you know, the value that I have, and actually a lot of the team have now, is being able to understand how we can build products to support that need. Now, that might be a belief, that might be a hypothesis that needs mm-hmm. to be tested. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's being able to sit, as you say, sit with that business leader, understand their specific goals. For example, if a business leader has a 35% growth target, then understanding what the current plans are for that growth target, right? You know, have they looked at their existing client relationships?
Yeah.
Where do they think, you know, how confident are they based on their existing sort of run process, their existing sort of growth rate? How far do they think that's going to get them? Sort of asking the kind of curious questions without looking like I'm being invasive or that we're being invasive to sort of understand. And again, just, you know, maybe just within the conversation in a follow-up suggest some potential approaches in which we could assist. Prepare things in advance, right? Be ready for those conversations, go with an idea. Again, be credible in the conversation is a key part to that, right? So because ultimately these people are experienced, very experienced at what they do, right? Whether they're, you know, leaders in the businesses or business units they lead, or they're practitioners that are essentially operating sort of day to day, it's not about trying to present yourself, in my experience, in my current role as an insurance broker or as the leader of a broking team. It's about being able to step into that conversation and say, I think I've got a few ideas here. I think there's a few things that we could work through. Let's do that together. Mm-hmm. We'll put you in a conversation. Again, that whole interaction, the term that was used by my mum in her previous life was bedside manner, right? So it's about, again, making that process feel like it's a pleasurable experience for a business. And then it changes over time, right? Once that's become a more established, more credible relationship, then it changes dimension a bit. You can afford to then be a bit more punchy, a bit more direct, and potentially even a bit more forthright, right? But you sort of have to earn the right to, for that to be a conversation of equals. This idea that, you know, I have to leave the ego at the door, right? If I step into a conversation with a peer, because ultimately we all serve at somebody else's pleasure.
Yes.
And yes, I'm in a business function. So, you know, it's one of the key things that attracted me to the role is, you know, we're not sitting in the middle of back office. You know, we're sitting in the front office. But ultimately, you know, we're in a trading environment. Mm-hmm. We have a fast-paced business strategy and we have a very, very busy front office. So I have to understand how I adapt, how I ensure the team adapts to that environment, being accretive to the work that the teams, the breaking teams and breaking leadership are trying to do, whilst at the same time understanding how we can best diagnose, understand their business goals in a way that allows us to ultimately then, you're right, turn that back into whether they are data use cases, understand how a product or a set of analysis can support those specific goals. And then and then it's an evolution thereof, right? So I don't necessarily wear the productization hat, but ultimately I think the sooner you can get into a sort of a product type mindset, it's sort of really helpful to start thinking about, to your earlier point, an MVP, getting something out to test a conversation quite quickly for people to go, that doesn't really help. Actually, that's not exactly what I need, but actually that's made me think of this, right? And mm-hmm. then it's mm-hmm. that iteration, and that's where it becomes a discussion, right? And at that point, then you're in the discussion, then it's about how you stay in it in a way. And ultimately it comes back to the point about delivering, right? There come a point in that where you may well realize that there is no opportunity.
That's right.
Either from a business standpoint.
And just let it go.
Exactly, right? And then it's how you manage yourself out of that conversation, and then manage yourself into others.
Yeah. And I think there's a level of, I mean, there's always going to be a sort of a failure rate level, I'm assuming. You know, certainly in you know, when I've been in a position of data leadership, I know that in my corporate roles, not everything was going to be, not everything was going to work. You know, I had to take that view because, again, like you, in the roles that I was from in my corporate roles, they were very, you know, I was probably the first data leader in those particular roles. So for me, it was, how am I going to build credibility, as you talked about? But, you know, not everybody's going to be on side with me because everybody's, you know, doesn't know what this thing called data is. And I'm talking, you know, my first data leadership role was in 2002. I mean, that's a bloody long time ago to you know, to even, people weren't even thinking about data at that point. But so I think, you know, it there is something else about data leadership that is, has kind of come up in the last, you know, week or so. And it's, you know, conversations. It's the LinkedIn echo chamber. You know, and I've noticed this thing where we're talking about value and we're talking about delivering value, but I've had a lot of responses where some people say, well, actually, it's not the data leader's account or responsibility, or they're not accountable for delivering value. Yes. And I kind of look at that and think, that's a bit strange, because if I'm a data leader, I am working on the CEO's objectives. And those could be functionally, as you say, obviously strategic, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I need to know that I'm going to be delivering something that's going to impact that, and that we're going to be able to either increase revenue, we're going to protect revenue, we're going to, you know, optimize some costs somewhere, we're going to build a better customer experience, or, you know, we're going to be in a, there's some kind of regulatory view that we need to build as well. But I'm dumbfounded at why some people believe that data leadership doesn't really offer value. We stop, you know, the response was, or the comments that I read were, we stop at one point, we give the business the, I don't know, sales by region and sales by product, etc., and then they go away and they do all the bit by, you know, speaking to people in procurement, doing this, doing that. What's your take on where a data leader starts, stops, or doesn't? And how much proactivity is there in that? Because, you know, that...
Yeah. That's a great question. Proactivity was almost a good word to sort of anchor on. I'd say this really comes down to, I want to call it the guile of a, again, very, very much a football term. I know, to me, you and I support the same team, that won't get mentioned, because otherwise this conversation will go in a completely different direction.
We'll
start to feel more like therapy. But it's this ability to read the room. I mean, I think there's a purist view to a lot of these conversation topics, but the reality is it is very organizational dependent. Each organization's got its own goals, it's got its own politics, it's got its own challenges. And I think my experience, to build on what definitely sounds like it's been a hot topic in the last couple of weeks, is also some data leaders feel that it's their responsibility to tell an exec, to tell a CEO what their goals are.
Right.
Right. Okay. So some are trying to be pure business strategists.
Yep.
Right. Which may or may not be useful depending on the organization, and may or may not be appreciated depending on the organization.
Yeah.
And some are a bit like, you know, you've got a CDO who's trying to, you know, spend their lifetime trying to define an organization's KPIs. It's like, well, you've got to, in my experience, you've got to plug in and understand how an organization defines value. Now, you might not like that. You might not agree with it.
Yep.
Right? But that's the conditions. That's the pitch you've been given to play on. Right. Now, maybe you get the chance to influence that over time. But unless you've been brought in to generally, you know, sit alongside a CEO and run the entire business, your role is, first and foremost, certainly from day one in a low maturity business, is to understand how an organization defines value and really, really lean into that.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, that might not be a purist, you know, In a lot of instances, I mean, you know, the strategy here is absolutely fantastic, but I certainly worked in organizations where the strategy has been somewhat ambiguous, right? So you can spend a lifetime sort of
Trying to work
pontificating
that
over
out.
critiquing the fact that, you know, do you know what the
There
issue
isn't
here is,
one.
the issue here is the business strategy, right? Well,
Yes.
you have to lean into it differently, right?
Correct.
So
Correct.
as you say, and I know you've done this countless times before, you spend the time with a CEO, with a CFO, with a CCO, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You understand to them what's on their mind. You understand to them what are their goals, what are their challenges. There's all these opportunities hiding in plain sight. It
Yeah,
might not
there
be
are.
the big ticket strategic stuff, right? You've got to find an entry point. You find an entry point, you become a trusted advisor, you get a seat at a table, you
Yes.
engage in a way where your voice starts to get heard a bit more, you start to get asked to engage, and at some point you start to feel like you are leading on some of those conversations, right? But this idea that one, if all you're doing is doing functional work, there's a chance to either that's the role you've been given and it may not be the role you want, or actually not, that's not the role you should be doing, and maybe that's something to think about. I can lead a team that does the functional work, but quite frankly, if that's all it was for me, then again, I'm probably not a good
The right,
fit, right? So I would certainly, similar to you, I would question why anybody thinks their role isn't value based, but I'd also follow up question is to ask them how they think they're defining value,
correct,
and
yeah.
how connected and aligned that is to how an organization or a leadership within an organization defines it. Because if there's a misalignment there, I mean,
Yeah,
the
then you're
rest
gonna
is either
always,
the rest
yes.
is just the rest is just left to chance, right? So
Well, exactly.
yeah.
Ben, I have had a great time talking to you, and I know we've kind of gone over our time allocation as well. I know you've got a really tough day ahead of you, afternoon, I would say. But look, thank you so much for coming onto the show. I've had a blast, honestly.
Likewise.
I think we've got to have part two, to be honest, because there is
And
so
three
much.
and four and five. I'm just
You could
trying
just
to,
fill up the next, 20 episodes.
well, I'm just trying, maybe next time I won't wear a hat. Maybe that's, maybe
Well,
I'll freshen it up. But
yeah.
I'm just desperately trying to get invited back so I can get an even warmer, I can get a Bill Shmarzo type welcome next time. But look,
Come on,
I appreciate you inviting me on. You know, I'm a massive fan of the work you and the team at Datazym do.
thank
You
you.
are a you're a you're a you're somebody I lean on a lot for advice and expertise and guidance, and will continue to do so. That's a just a heads up. That's not changing anytime soon. I think
No
anybody
problem.
that's worked with you or worked with Datazym will share it a similar view. And quite frankly, you know, people would be businesses and people and individuals and data leaders would be lucky if they could, you know, find a slot in your and the business's diary, right, in terms of advice, expertise and support. So
Well, thank you. Thank you.
super grateful to be invited on,
No,
and
it's my
definitely
pleasure. I
I look
really
forward to
enjoyed
part
it.
two.
I do as well. I do as well, because I think there is so much to talk about. But look, thank you.
Too much.
You've been fantastic. Love the hat. Next time, I don't know, maybe it's by the pool or something like that. So take care.
Sounds good.
Have a good one. I'll
You
speak to
too.
you
Take
soon.
care.
Take care. Bye.